right, y'all. Welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. Hey guys, on the line, I've got Jim Bovard. He wrote most of the books that are out, including Public Policy Hooligan, which I know you'll love. And he's been writing for us at the Libertarian Institute, thank goodness. This one is called Kosovo Indictment Proves Bill Clinton's Serbian War Atrocities. That is at libertarianinstitute.org. Welcome back to the show. How you doing, Jim?
Hey, doing good, Scott. Thanks for your kind words. Thanks for your encouragement to write that story.
Oh, I'm glad you did. But I'm so confused because, geez, I seem to remember the Bill Clinton years being peacetime, Jim. No?
Well, that's true. I mean, that's the fairy tale. I mean, it's sort of like the fairy tale that that there was not any corruption scandals during the Obama administration, and that George W. Bush was more honest than he seemed at the time.
Oh, yeah, he kept us safe. Except, you know, that one big thing.
Well, and if you're in the military, or if you're Iraq or Afghani or about 25 other nationalities.
Right.
Ethnic groups.
Right on. Okay, so I do remember 1999, actually. I was just pretending. And so what happened was, is he was impeached but not removed, and then he celebrated by starting a war. Pretty much. Oh, and in fact, I guess we know right from Gail Sheehy's book that Hillary essentially wouldn't talk to him unless he would bomb Serbia. And that was how they put their marriage back together after the Lewinsky scandal was based on spilling this blood. And so, yeah, fancy that. Who would have guessed that, huh? But anyway.
Well.
So, but it was all for a good cause, to save the people or what?
Well, the Clinton folks said there was genocide going on. The Serbs were guilty of genocide. The Clinton folks compared the Serbian leader to Hitler. And almost all the American media went along like, trained dogs and just followed the administration line. And they tend to ignore the carnage when the U.S. And NATO allies blew up hospitals, trains, marketplaces, and they didn't really care when the U.S. scattered cluster bombs all over the landscape, cluster bombs that would be going off for many years afterwards and maiming young children.
And depleted uranium.
I mean, there was just so many things that should have outraged Americans at the time, but most of the American media let Bill Clinton get away with his storyline of him as a great savior. And the Serbs is a great demon. I mean, it's surprising that so many American policymakers had not learned the folly of getting into a quarrel about European borders, which was kind of what this was. But they wanted to liberate. Well, you know, I hope we find out more details of what Clinton knew and at the time. But what we already know is that the Clinton administration had previously condemned the Kosovo Liberation Army as a bunch of terrorists. That was accurate. But in 1999, basically as part of the PR scam, the KLA was magically turned into freedom fighters, and they were portrayed as heroes by the Clinton administration and by much of the bootlicking American media.
Yeah. And so this war, I guess I could have clarified at the beginning, introducing the subject matter there, that the war was essentially to break off this province of Serbia, Kosovo, to be an independent, some days sort of pseudo state there, right?
Yeah, that was the goal. I mean, it wasn't, I mean, what the Clinton folks would usually say, well, we've got to stop the ethnic cleansing. And they were saying 100,000 people might have been killed or are missing. Hundreds of thousands there, hundreds of thousands of there. It's kind of embarrassing. After the war ended, there were not the mass graves that the Clinton folks had implied would be found. And you had a lot of dead Serbs. You had some dead ethnic Albanians, but you didn't really have the carnage that the Clinton folks used to justify bombing Belgrade, which is, you know, it's a European city, it's a foreign capital, and it had done no harm to us. Bill Clinton felt morally obliged to, blow the hell out of that city and the entire country of Serbia.
Yeah. And, you know, it was such an obvious bunch of crap at the time, too. 100,000 people had been killed when there was no real reason to believe that other than, you know, the U.S. and NATO's claims at the time. And then, but the point being, though, that that was the weapons of mass destruction here, right? If Bill Clinton had not said 100,000, but had said, well, you know, some fighters are being killed in the fighting, then that would not have been a pretext for war. The 100,000 was, you know, the magic number, right? Like when your odometer rolls over to 100,000 and you're like, yeah, that's a big round number, man, to go a bunch of dead civilians. And then it turned out that that wasn't true at all, that it was a few thousand, almost all fighting age males whose bodies were found in the aftermath there.
Well, yeah, I mean, the 100,000 makes a nice headline, but there have been so many times where the U.S. government was, used similar storylines to justify carnage, launching carnage abroad. But I was fascinated at the time of the war to see, you know, day after day, there's video of the U.S. bombing the Chinese embassy. There's the intentional bombing of the radio television headquarters of Serbia. There's bombing of these bridges. There's bombing of this. And it's, having read a lot about World War II history and the history of some of the subsequent wars, it's like, well, you know, we're killing a lot of innocent people. But it did not seem as if that registered with much of the American media. And I tried to sell some articles criticizing the war at the time as like, you know, Irish need not apply. There was just almost no tolerance for criticism as far as from the editors who I dealt with.
Yeah. Another big part of it at the time, too, was we're just going to bomb them for the weekend. It'll be easy. And they'll do what we say after that.
And then it turned out to be 78 days and wrecked much of the country. And, it was kind of embarrassing. They also went and blew hell out of at least one refugee column of ethnic Albanians. And there was systemic lying by the Pentagon about the atrocities which were unleashed by the bombing. Kind of the same thing that happens after every war. But there was a level of media gullibility is a phrase that came to mind, but it's not, we need a much harsher phrase because it was as if the most of the American media turned off their bullshit radars as soon as the bomb started to drop.
Yeah. Hey, as long as it's not another sex scandal, good enough for us, they cried, you know. And meanwhile, the lady from CNN married the guy from the State Department right in the middle of the thing.
Well, that's that probably explains some things.
They agreed before they got married. They agreed about the war. The cart came after the horse for sure there. But what a confluence, though, huh?
Well, I mean, there were so many different levels, in which the U.S. media utterly failed in this war, as did the Clinton administration. And, as usual, when the truth came out long after the bombing had stopped, it probably got 2% as much coverage as the lies that were promulgated during the war. So that's part of the reason a lot of Americans are so gullible when the politicians try to drag us into another war.
Right. Yeah, we always find out the horrible truth. It's out there on every single one of them, but we just find out later. That's the problem.
Well, most people find out later, but I mean, if folks are watching, if memory serves, there was much better coverage of the Serbian war, the U.S. bombing campaign of NATO, U.S. bombing campaign of Serbia, better coverage in the European press than the American press. But that's, not surprising.
Yep. In fact, there's a story there about antiwar.com where they had sources there who were living through the war and were running original stories at that time. And that was their first, you know, big thing. I remember driving down the road, listening to talk radio and hearing some war propaganda. And then the caller says, that's not true, man. It's on antiwar.com right now.
That's great.
The real story is this or that. That was, I had seen them once before in 98 or maybe earlier in 99. I had seen the site and I had seen that they were libertarians. And then I remember hearing about them on the radio then and thinking, all right, man.
Little did you know that the anti-war would become your life mission.
Yeah, seriously. Hey, it's a great website. You know, what am I going to do? Build my own website? I'll just ride these guys' coattails. They're doing a good job.
It was such a good website. 20 years later, they still have it.
Yeah, and it's still good. And I just before you interviewed Dave DeCamp and Jason Ditz from news.antiwar.com because I have
been
good
there. That's good. Well, okay. I will not make any rude comments about the website.
Yeah, you better not. Okay, it's been since about the start of Iraq War II that we had a redesign. If that's
what
you were gonna say. For the front page anyway. Yeah, I know
okay.
we need that's still it's the most important website on the internet though, no question about it to me.
Yeah, I wasn't aware the website was that new.
You got me. Hey, y'all, check it out. The Libertarian Institute, that's me and my friends, have published three great books this year. First is No Quarter, The Ravings of William Norman Grigg. He was the best one of us. Now he's gone, but this great collection is a truly fitting legacy for his fight for freedom. I know you'll love it. Then there's Coming to Palestine by the great Sheldon Richman. It's a collection of 40 important essays he's written over the years about the truth behind the Israel-Palestine conflict. You'll learn so much and highly value this definitive libertarian take on the dispossession of the Palestinians and the reality of their brutal occupation. And last but not least is the great Ron Paul, The Scott Horton Show Interviews, 2004 through 2019. Interview transcripts of all of my interviews of the Good Doctor over the years on all the wars, money, taxes, the police state, and more. So how do you like that? Pretty good, right? Find them all at libertarianinstitute.org/books. Hey, you guys may know I'm involved in some Libertarian Party politics this year, but you can't hear or read about that at the Libertarian Institute due to 501c3 rules and such. So make sure to sign up for the interviews feed at scotthorton.org and keep an eye on my blog at scotthorton.org/stress. Hey y'all, Scott here. If you want a real education in history and economics, you should check out Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. Tom and a really great group of professors and experts have put together an entire education of everything they didn't teach you in school, but should have. Follow through from the link in the margin at scotthorton.org for Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. Hey, listen, let's talk about this indictment that proves Bill Clinton's Serbian war atrocities. You started to bring that up, and then I changed the subject to something else or something. But you were talking about the KLA, these bin Ladenite, at least tied gangster terrorists that America fought that war for. And but what's this indictment, and who's indicted, and what's it matter and prove, and what?
Okay, well, this is where I'll tap your expertise on pronunciation.
No, man, don't. I've only ever read it quietly to myself, so I don't know.
Well, I've never pretended to be fluent in Albanian, but so anyhow, Kosovo President Hashim Thaçi was charged with 10 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity by an international tribunal in The Hague. He was charged with murder and forced disappearance of persons, persecution, torture. He and the other folks charged are accused of being criminally responsible for nearly 100 murders. And prior to this, the bosses of the KLA have been linked to body trafficking, where they would kidnap people, often Serbs, that this is the allegation, and then murder them and then sell their body parts, which is kind of bad even for a terrorist group. It's not surprising this guy was indicted because the U.S. government, the State Department, was saying similar things about the KLA 22 years ago, prior to them becoming sainted freedom fighters. But it's interesting to see how this guy's career has gone. There's a lot of a lot of corruption in Kosovo. It's one of the more corrupt nations in the world, according to Transparency International. The political situation there is not good, but they have a statue of Bill Clinton right in the capital city. And I think there's a Bill Clinton Boulevard. I'm not sure if there's a Monica Lewinsky back alley, but you know, we'll let that one go. But Bill Clinton was there last year for the 10th anniversary of the, the statue being unveiled. He and Madeleine Albright, as Secretary of State, were treated like rock stars when they posed with this guy that just got indicted, Thaci. And Clinton declares, "I love this country and it will be always one of the greatest honors of my life to have stood with you against ethnic cleansing and for freedom." Mm-hmm. And so so Thaci gave Clinton and Albright the local version of Medals of Freedom. And it's like, well, okay, so they got the same bullshit there, which we got here, as far as Presidential Medals of Freedom. But Albright is interesting because she was one of the most fanatic people in favor of bombing Belgrade, in favor of bombing Serbia. More recently reinvented herself as a visionary warning against the dangers of fascism. But I would think that launching a bombing campaign that kills a lot of innocent civilians, maybe it's not fascist, but it's also, it's part of her permanent record. But the American media, again, treats her like she's a visionary when she should be known as being the butcher of Belgrade.
Absolutely. And, you know, that Rambouillet Accord, which was this supposed peace deal. Well, go ahead, tell him.
I
triggered you there, Jim.
Yeah, I think you're a little more fluent on the details. Basically, I recall it was a crock of shit. And it was, it was a bullshit ultimatum to the Serbs that I think even Kissinger said it was obvious that they would never accept it. But the whole point was to give a pretext for to start bombing. Yep. It might be in that sense similar to the Austrian demands to Serbia in 1914 after the assassination of the Archduke.
Yeah. And which, by the way, she could have really tried to negotiate there. It was such an obvious fake pretext. I mean, the one thing that was the deal killer was that they had to agree to allow NATO troops to occupy the entire country of Serbia. Apparently, like up to and including the presidential palace or whatever, all of it.
Yeah. And
come on.
It was a completely bullshit demand that was mostly ignored by the American press. I mean, I think there were some very good European, British, maybe John Pilger as well, wrote about that at the time. But for the American press, it was just, well, the Serbs are unreasonable. We made them an offer. And it's kind of like, it's like having an offer by the local police. Well, okay, we don't have a search warrant, but we're going to occupy your house for the next 5 years.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yep. And you make the point here, too, about how this really helped to set up sort of the background of the argument for Iraq War II, that, hey, if the Democrats can have a war to save the people in Serbia, of course the Republicans can have a war to save the people of Iraq. And, of course, if we can't get a UN resolution to authorize it, we'll just do it anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a Clinton's war in Serbia. It's a Pandora's box. And there's evil still coming out of that. It set a precedent for humanitarian intervention, military humanitarian intervention to stop ethnic cleansing, genocide. That was how it was sold. And the fact that it turned out to be complete bullshit was irrelevant because the politicians and the media managed to sell it. So it was a similar arguments that Bush used for the U.S. has to bring democracy to Iraq. Similar to what Obama used to justify bombing Libya.
Yep.
And Trump's people probably said similar things on Syria, but they've talked so much contradictory BS, it's hard to keep track.
Yeah. All right, now listen, man, I want to talk to you about this thing that you wrote for the American Conservative, too, about the Korean War. And
yep, there you go.
They say it's the forgotten war, but, don't forget Afghanistan. That's another forgotten war. And don't forget, Somalia. We forget that one every day. But this one boy, it's really important what happened there. And there's so many things about the world right now that trace themselves back to the crisis back then. And you got into the real, you know, nitty gritty of just who's the good guys and the bad guys when America intervenes over in these countries to save the people. Again, the same kind of narrative like we're talking about in Serbia, Iraq, Libya, that where America is Superman and the Christopher Reeve, you know, Richard Donner Superman, just trying his best to liberate France from the Nazis, just like always. And but it doesn't always. And in fact, the French got bombed the hell out of, too, during that. People don't know about that. But talk about the Korean War for the people, because most of them don't know a thing about it.
Well, the point of my piece was that the biggest lesson of the Korean, one of the biggest lessons of the Korean War was to never trust the Pentagon on atrocities. There was there were a lot of atrocities by U.S. forces, certainly a lot of atrocities by communists as well. But the thing about a lot of the American atrocities was that they were mandated by the top level of the military command and the State Department. There were orders to shoot civilian refugees who were coming close to American lines. There was a case in July 1950 in which U.S. planes and machine guns strafed a bunch of Korean refugees for 3 days. Hundreds of people, mostly women and children, were killed. There was a, this was, you know, this vanished for 49 years until the Associated Press brought it out and talked about and exposed the massacre at the bridge of Nogun Rai, which I might or might not be pronouncing right. So the AP story sparked a big investigation. A year and a half later, at the end of the Clinton administration, Pentagon issues a 300-page report proving that the massacre was, it was an unfortunate tragedy simply caused by trigger-happy soldiers. President Clinton commented that you know, that he didn't have to offer an apology because, you know, the because the people who looked at it in the Pentagon had said it was not a deliberate act. It wasn't decided at a high enough level in the hierarchy to acknowledge that the U.S. government had participated in something terrible.
Yeah, it was just the National Guard on the night shift, man. Some bad apples. You know how it goes.
Yeah, but and so, I mean, what intrigued me on this was that, okay, so you had a Pentagon claiming to do a thorough investigation, 300 pages. 4 years later, you've got a Harvard University doctoral student in history, Sar Conway Lance. He found a letter in the archives showing that the U.S. ambassador to Korea had sent to the Assistant Secretary of State, Dean Rusk, on the day the massacre started, saying that it would be U.S. policy. If you see the refugees from the north, you know, fire a warning shot and then shoot them. And those rules of engagement were sent to the U.S. troops prior to the massacre. Same guy, Conway Lance, comes back the following year, finds a lot more stuff, and shows that the, you know, for instance, an official army history said it was decided to shoot anyone who moved at night. So it doesn't say, except for women and children. No, they were moving. There was a U.S. aircraft carrier justified attacking civilians because the army said that groups of more than 8 to 10 people should be considered troops and were to be attacked. Okay, so the army does another investigation 2 years later. There was no policy authorizing troops to shoot refugees. Never gave such orders. Associated Press goes back, finds more dirt. I think it was Charles Hanley that did some of the great work on this. And finds a lot more evidence that the U.S. Government had mandated this. And there were former Air Force pilots who said that they were told to strafe the refugees time and again. The South Koreans launched their own Truth and Reconciliation Commission and found a lot of other horrendous atrocities by the U.S. and allies, as well as by communists. But it was obvious from the get-go that there had been, that the U.S. rules of engagement were horrendous. General Curtis LeMay said that we burned down every town in North Korea and some in South Korea too. Millions of civilians could have been killed in that war. And yet, what the Pentagon did was bottle it up so that the truth was found out by historians and not by the policymakers. The facts about these massacres finally came out 10 presidencies later. And, you know, people, something I hear as a journalist all the time, well, truth will out. I said, yeah, well, you know, I'm holding my breath on this one. 10 presidencies later. And it was tragic because you had rules of engagement that were horrendous for Korea. And because they were covered up, you had the same rules in Afghanistan, the same rules in Vietnam, mm-hmm. and the same rules in Iraq, and to a lesser degree in Afghanistan. And you had vast numbers of civilian casualties, most of which the government swept under the rug.
Yeah. No, that's a really important point that, hey, if they had been forced somehow, I don't know, by Congress or somebody, the people, to tell the truth about this, then.
I was too soon. There have been some good people in Congress who pushed on this, but most of the time they have ducked and run. I mean, I think the experience with Ellsberg was begging senators to take those Pentagon papers right. and go public with him. Everyone was a coward except for Mike Gravel.
Right. Yeah, it's certainly true. But anyway, just in the pretendethetical there, that it might have made a difference in Vietnam if before Vietnam Absolutely. There had really been a big scandal about the atrocities in Korea instead of a bunch of PR nonsense about how heroic and innocent it all was.
Yeah, and there's a second wrinkle on this, and that is that the Pentagon, once this controversy flared up in 1999, what they did is take their frontline soldiers, the riflemen, the others, they threw them under the bus because it was their fault. It wasn't. It was the fault of the military high command, and this is that's unsavory.
Yeah, well, and then there was another one where it was just, an earthquake and a mudslide or something revealed this giant mass grave a few years ago.
Oh, interesting. And this is in Korea?
Yeah, in South Korea.
Okay.
And I think it was all just falsely accused. Look, they're all Reds. Kill them. In fact, I want to go back to this thing about the airstrikes since I'm springing that one on you. People can look that up. The bodies were revealed in the mud and it became a big scandal.
Okay.
Now, they were citing, as you say in your article here, we're afraid that infiltrators might be coming across. If they're North Korean refugees, it would make sense that they would, infiltrate a communist agent in there. So I don't know how likely that was or what damage they thought those people could do, or if the South Korean government had just said that they had no ability whatsoever to separate who was who or what the actual circumstances. But then they decided that based on that, just kill them all. There's a giant group of refugees coming across from the north, which, for all you know, it's the North Korean right wing that's fleeing the communist terror who want to all be South Koreans now. Or I'm just making that up, right?
But yeah, Scott, and there's a second wrinkle on this because the military guidelines were for people who were north of the front line, and their front lines in Korea shifted all over the place. So it was likely at some times a lot of those refugees would have been South Korean. Because who were fleeing the communists.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter. It didn't matter because they were, you'd ask about the bombing campaign, and it was fascinating how the U.S. military kept expanding its definition of military target. And it eventually became any structure that could shelter enemy troops or supplies. And they would boast. I mean, it was kind of like back in Vietnam, you had body counts that were mostly BS. But during the Korea War, you had Air Force press releases that bragged about the square footage of enemy-held buildings. Enemy-held buildings. Does that include the peasant's hut?
Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, there's a quote from, I think, MacArthur, I don't know who, but it's a prominent one of the people who was certainly in a position over there who talked about, we didn't leave one brick stacked on top of another.
Wow.
They had just burnt, they napalmed the whole damn country to the ground there.
Well, it was very aggressive. A lot of innocent people were killed, and that's, it's an active legacy in North Korea. I mean, they've got a horrible government, But I mean, there's a reason they still hate us. So,
yeah. Well, and you know, I'm glad you brought that up because it seems like, you know, and I'm not for government doing things or anything, but it seems like they could really make peace with North Korea right now based on a big apology for Harry Truman and what happened back then. And that, man, if it was us, we wouldn't have killed all y'all like that. That's terrible, man. And, you know, Harry Truman's burning in hell for sure, in a probably a giant vat of napalm. But still, we can get along now. And since America is the 6-trillion-ton gorilla and all of that stuff, that we could just drop all the sanctions and open up trade and just be nice and sign a peace treaty, formalizing an end to that old war, and just really push the no hard feelings line as hard as we could and have a perfectly normal relationship with North Korea after all this time. It wouldn't really cost us anything at all.
I don't, maybe that would help. Maybe it would work. I don't know. I don't know the North Korean government that well. They seem like they're kind of batshit crazy pretty often, but it's unfortunate. One of the changes over the last 32 years is that American leaders have become too proud to apologize for American atrocities. Yeah. And the example that comes to mind is the 1988 when a U.S. aircraft carrier, whatever, destroyer, shot down an Iranian passenger jet and killed, what, like 300 civilians. Mm-hmm. It was a mistaken identity. And I think memory serves, President Reagan said, basically, you know, it wasn't groveling, but I think he did signal, you know, some type of apology and say he was sorry. Whereas George H.W. Bush basically said, well, I'll never apologize for anything the U.S. government does. That's not his exact phrase, but that was a gist of it. He was running for president.
Yeah.
You know, he was.
In fact, he even said, I don't care what the facts are.
There you go. Yeah. So whereas Ronald Reagan had the class, if my memory is correct on this, to at least make some statement. But no, I mean, and that's going back. I can't recall similar things like that from the time. I mean, there was a President Obama did a tour and made apologies for things that happened long before he was born, but that's not the same.
Yeah. Well, it seems like they have so much to gain and we have so much to offer that. And, you know, if I was president, I'd be like, let me tell you about Harry Truman, all right? And then spit on the ground. And it'd be clear that I hate him as much as they do. And we all should. And it's fine. And I think that would be a great first step toward establishing trust, you know?
Well, Scott, with that attitude towards Truman, I'm afraid you'll never be on the PBS NewsHour.
You know, I'm pretty much betting that that's not the case. In fact, I'll go ahead and tell you a funny thing. The Young Americans for Liberty were trying to get John Bolton to debate me. And his PR people were really working on it for a long time. But then they only told him kind of later in the process who it was that he was supposed to go up against. And they answered back that, yeah, no, he is not going to be debating Scott Horton from antiwar.com.
So, isn't that great? That's find a way to use that for your fundraising. Seriously.
Yeah, I might could. I don't know, man. Because on one hand, I know I could spin it like, ha ha, he's afraid of me or something. But the reality is that he's hot right now. And why would he debate me? You know, that's really the answer why he wouldn't do it. So
it doesn't matter. I'd spin it. So
I guess I might.
I mean, it's funny.
You know, Bill Kristol agreed to do it, but and they were trying to get him to come to Austin. And sort of combine the YAL thing with the Gene Epstein debate in New York. But Kristol didn't want to come to Austin. So I think we're still on to debate someday in New York, but I don't know when that might be.
Well, I think you'll have fun with him.
And he's the same difference as John Bolton mostly, so it'll be fine.
I think he's a little more polished. And John Bolton has a record that you can nail him on. So
that's true.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Bill Kristol is, he was Dan Quayle's speechwriter. But other than that, it wasn't exactly his fault, just a lot.
Kind Dan of. Quayle's brain.
Yeah, man. Wouldn't that be a great title to carry with you?
Legacy.
Yeah. Man, that and a few other things. All right. Well, listen, I'm glad you wrote about this in the American Conservative, and I hope people will go and read it because it's you really do make a lot of great points in here about that war and this specific war crime and the broader context and all this stuff. I do hope people check that out. It's at theamericanconservative.com. The Korean War atrocities no one wants to talk about. And then, of course, also at the Libertarian Institute, Kosovo indictment proves Bill Clinton's Serbian war atrocities. Thank you for that, Jim, and thank you for your time on the show again, my friend.
Hey, thanks so much, Scott.
The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.